throat and then fasting on the tanit. He explains his significance. Halacha bet. V'davar ze midarkei hatshuvahu. A tanit is part of the process of tshuva. Shebizman shetavot saravi yizaku alev yariu. When bad things happen and people cry out over it, yedu hakol shebeglal ma'aseim haraim hura lahem. Everyone will realize that the things that are happening because of the bad things they've done. End of halacha bet. V'zehu sheyigrom lahem lahasir hatzara me'aleihem. This realization is what will ultimately stop the suffering from occurring. Rambam continues in halacha gimel. Aval im lo yizaku v'lo yariu. But if people don't respond with cries, and instead of that, yomru davar zemi minag ha'olam yira lanu. People instead say, look, these things happen. Sarazu nikranikrate, it's happenstance. Harezu derech achzoriyut, this is the way of insensitivity. Vigoremet lehem lidavik b'maseyam aroim, and instead of fixing things, people become more addicted to their problems. And what will happen is, tosif atzara tzarat acherot, there'll be more bad things that'll happen in the wake. Quote Pesukim in Sefer Vayikra and the Tocha, which speak about this. In essence, what the Rambam is explaining to us is that atan is not some kind of ritual where we suffer and you don't have coffee. The 5 shekel, the 6 shekel, the 8 shekel, the 9 shekel, you know, and you suffer and you know, some kind of Christian sense of penitence. A tanit is a way of recognizing and expressing the recognition that the suffering happens for a reason and there's what for us to fix. The chiddush of the Rambam is that taniyot are meant to be about this not only when they're in response to suffering happening at the moment, a drought, a war, but even when it's to commemorate something that happened in the past. The Rambam expresses this chiddush in Perek Hey, later in Hilchot Taniyot, when he moves from taniyot that are about something happening in the present to taniyot that are about something that happened in the past. The Rambam writes there, the purpose of these taniyot are kedei la'orer halavavot, to awaken the hearts that may have fallen asleep. V'liftoach darkei tshuva. Again, he uses the concept of tshuva here. Bring one to the paths of tshuva. Now here comes where the Rambam meshes past with present. V'yihyeze zikaron l'maaseinu haroim u'maaseh avoteinu shehaya k'maaseinu ata ad shegaram lahem v'lanu otan atzarot. This line is where the Rambam answers the obvious question. How does an event that happened in the past affect us? Why do we need to do tshuva for something terrible that happened thousands of years ago? What does it have to do with us? The Rambam writes that the Tanit is a reminder of the mistakes we make that are like the mistakes our ancestors made that caused them and us to suffer similar fate. Or in other words, if the Beit Mikdash hasn't been rebuilt, if Yerushalayim hasn't yet been fortified, which it hasn't, all you have to do is read the news, that's because whatever led to the destruction then continues to exist now. The inspiration for this Rambam is, of course, the famous Yerushalmi in Yoma, where it says, "Kol dor she'eno nivne biyomav ma'al in olav kilu hu echrivo." A generation that the Beit Mikdash isn't rebuilt in their days is as if they destroyed it. The point is, if we had repaired whatever problems led to the fate in the past, we would no longer be suffering that fate. Or in other words, on every time that a person has to be thinking in the following direction. What am I commemorating? What kind of suffering am I commemorating? How can I identify that kind of suffering today? What led to that suffering then? How is that problem still existent today and how do I fix it? The answer to that question is different on every tanit, of course, but the question is the same. Let's turn now to page 2 and start speaking a little bit about the uniqueness of Asar v'Teved. And unless you're familiar with this, you'll be very surprised about this fact about Asar v'Teved. If you look carefully, top page 3, Cheskel Perichov Dalit, where he refers to Asar B'Tevet, Chodesh Asiri B'Asar L'Chodesh, twice he refers to it as Etzem Hayom Hazeh. Now the phrase Etzem Hayom Hazeh does not appear many times in Tanakh. The first place it appears very intensively is Vayikra Perichov Gimel by Yom Kippur, second source. The Beit Yosef quotes the Avudraham, who based upon this is Mechadesh, a huge Chiddush by Asar B'Tevet, and that is, it's Mishuna Mishara Taniot, that if Asar B'Tevet falls on Shabbat, we would not push it off to another day. Tisha B'Av that falls on Shabbos, we push off. Asar B'Tevet that falls on Shabbos is like Yom Kippur that falls on Shabbos. We fasted on that day. What a shocker. Let's all breathe that in for a minute. today the calendar is arranged in a way that Aser B'Teves does not fall on Shabbat, but it can fall on Friday, and is in fact the only fast fasted on Friday, for the same reason. I think the explanation for this, just in passing, is a very famous Reb Chaim Alashas in Rosh Hashanah, where he explains that the Taniyot as a whole aren't linked to a particular day, the ones Midrabanan, they're linked to a month. We'll get to the Pasuk later in Zechariah, where he refers to each Taniyot based on the month. But the fact that Yecheskel refers to Aser B'Teves Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh means that it is linked to a particular day. And that's why, if it fell on Shabbos, we would fast it even on Shabbat. The Ritva in Rosh Hashanah seems to say a very similar thing. Those who want to take a look, it's just to understand that particular halacha. But now the question becomes, what's so severe about this particular day? If I had to ask you which particular day was more significant, the day the siege was laid or the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, you probably would have said the latter and not the former. But you see halachically that this specific day is very important. And this way, Aser B'Teves is more severe than Tisha B'Av itself. The B'nai Yisachar, the great Chassidish Rebbe, has a very interesting formulation of the broader idea of Aser B'Teves. And he says, the reason it's so severe is because it's the beginning. People very often see the severity of something at the end. They miss the beginning of where it all starts to unravel. And he says, based on the Gemara in Tanis, Daf Chavtes, which talks about the Atchalta de Peronusa, we all know the beginning of Geula being significant, but the Atchalta de Peronusa being significant as well. And this is really what we need to understand today. What is the significance of this particular day, Aser B'Teves, as the Atchalta de Peronuta, and what do we need to be reflecting on in general and about fixing in particular? If we turn to page 3, the third point we're going to discuss is something that to a certain extent is the opposite of what we just discussed. And that is the fact that there's a debate about which day the fast of Tevet should be. As I just mentioned, in Zechariah Perachet, he refers to each of the Tzomot by the month, Tzomar Revi, Tamuz, Tzomar Chamishi Av, Tzomar Shvi, Tzomar Gedali, Tzomar Asiri, Aser B'Teves. It doesn't say which day. Based on this, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah quotes Machloket between Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Akiva as to which day in Tevet the fast is supposed to be, and we're going to, of course, seek to understand the significances of both. The first opinion, that of Rabbi Akiva, the one we're familiar with, second line in the second source from page 3, Tzom ha'asiri ze'asar b'tevet, shebo samach melech bavel al Yerushalayim. Most people, you ask them Asar b'tevet, if they know what it is, they'll tell you the day when the siege was laid on Jerusalem. We read the psukim from Yecheskel earlier. If you look at your third source, it's also mentioned in Melachim Bet, Perech Chaf Hei. Okay. The Gemara continues and quotes the opinion of Shem Bayochai. Those who want to look in the Gemara, you'll see why he disagrees. Right now, we're interested in what he says. He says it should actually be the fifth day of Tevet. Why? That's the day when people in Bavel heard about the Churban the next year. If you look in Yecheskel Perek Lamed Gimel, he mentions he was in Galus already, how it was the fifth of the 10th month when the Palit, the refugees from Yerushalayim, arrived in Bavel and informed them the next year about the Churban. And here there's an obvious question. That should be a tainus. What's the significance about the day when people in Bavel heard about the Churban? Surprising. What's interesting is if you look at Megillat Tanit, written in Bayit Sheni, it adds a number of other days in the month of Tevet where bad things happen and therefore they should be sad days. The eighth day, it says, is the day when the Yevanim forced us to translate the Torah with all the negativity that went along with that. The tenth day, of course, is the siege. The mysterious one is the ninth day. But Tisha B'Av lo kasfu rabbeinu al mahu. The ninth day, they didn't tell us what it was. But it was something bad. Everyone likes a secret. What is the secret meaning of Tevet, of the fast of Tevet? So the Magen Avraham says, and the Shulchan Aruch who writes, we don't know what it is, Shulchan Aruch quotes Megillas Tanis, he goes, "Uv slichos shalanu isa, shemes Ezra Sofer." Magen Avraham points out that in our slichos, we mentioned that in the ninth day, Ezra Sofer died. You have it here, the slichot, B'shalosh makot b'chodesh ha'zeikani, mentions Ezra Sofer. I don't know if that really answers the question, though, because with all due respect to Ezra Sofer, who was quite the scribe, right? Meaning, we don't have a day when Moshe Rabbeinu died, when Aaron HaKohen died, Avraham Avinu, you know, a lot of great Jews died. See, if we're chsidish, you know, we make a kiddush on each of them. But why Davka Ezra Sofer? Everyone holding on for a second? Everyone ready? And some of the other mefarshim, they say, it's a fast day to commemorate not the day somebody died, but the day somebody born. Anyone knows who was born around this season? To be jolly, Tra-la-la-la-la. Nobody with me here? Yashke. I was born right around now, right? Some people say this is part of what we're commemorating, the damage that that did to the Jewish people. All this is mysterious. And even more mystery comes when you think about the added level to this in our own times. The Rabbanut HaRashit, when they had a question, how to commemorate the Holocaust, so we traditionally don't make new days. On the other hand, this is such a powerful thing, maybe we should. They decided of all the fast days, the one in which we should commemorate the Holocaust, and that's why the Yeshiva had the speaker this morning as a Sarbatavis. Why? How do all these other things connect to a Sarbatavis? This is what we want to discuss today, and we'll begin by studying the significance of the siege and use that to appreciate how the rest of the picture fits in. Let's now turn to point 4 on page 4. The Rambam in Hilchot Tani, we saw Perakei Halacha Aleph, where he describes Taniot in general based on the past. In Halacha Bet, he describes each one of them briefly. We spoke about on Tzom Gedalia the words the Rambam uses here. The coal of the Jewish people was extinguished. V'nichbis kachelet Yisrael anishar v'asiri b'lasam galusan. The second line he says, Asiri b'teves shebo samach melech bavel nebuchadnezzar arash al Yerushalayim. That's an objective fact, the day he laid siege. V'heviya b'matzor uv'matzok. He brought them under siege and under terrible suffering. We'll see exactly what matzok means. You know, in modern Hebrew, matzok means a cliff. Pushed them off the cliff. If you look carefully in Sefer Yecheskel, and we know in general, that is exactly the goal of a siege. The goal of a siege is to decimate a people, to bring death, destruction, and suffering until the people are too weak to resist. If you look in Yecheskel Perek Yud Zayin, talks there about the laying of the siege, the goal that the king had. B'shvoch salalah bevnot dayek lahachrit nefashot rabot. To cut off as many souls as possible. Or Yecheskel Perek Chaf Aleph, liftoach po beretzach. To cause the murder, the death of as many people as possible. And this explains why in other prakim in Sefer Yecheskel, Sefer Yecheskel is full of imagery, where he's told to act out things that are going to happen for people who are familiar with Sefer Yecheskel. He's told to act out two scenes which are representative of the siege. The first one, in Pasuk Gimel, in Perek Chavdal, Pasuk Gimel, middle of page 4, he was told to fill up a pot full of meat. Already we're excited. Sounds like Laskov Cholent. He says, pull up a pot full of meat, light a fire under it, and keep cooking it until everything inside is absolutely burned and unedible. Until all the bones are turned to ashes. This pot that has all the meat inside that's burning it alive is the siege, he goes on to describe. And the meat are the Jews. Their goose is going to be cooked. Maybe even more severe in Yecheskel Perek Dalet, we'll talk about the significance of this, the Gemara talks about later. He says, Pasuk Gimel, take an iron pan. First, build a model of Yerushalayim, he's told. Pasuk Aleph. Engrave a model of Yerushalayim on it. Pasuk Bet, build around it a siege. Pasuk Gimel, take a pan, place it between the city and yourself. And what does this symbolize? The Jews are going to be cut off from the world, cut off from God. We'll talk about it later. And then he describes the terrible famine that will set in under the siege. So a siege is meant to cause terrible destruction. But the word the Rambam uses, matzor and matzok, top of page 4 again, b'matzor v'matzok, the Rambam took those words from page 5, Sefer Dvarim. If you look in Sefer Dvarim, we actually have a lengthy description as part of the Tochacha about the siege that the Goyim Erechok will lay on Yerushalayim, Pasuk Nun Bet, v'hitzar lecha b'chol she'arecha, it'll cause you suffering in all of your gates until they all fall down. And part of the suffering that's described, Pasuk Nun Gimel, V'yachalta fri vitnecha b'sar b'necha v'nosecha, you'll eat the flesh of your own children, because you'll be so desperate. Asher natan lecha Hashem elokecha, b'matzor uv'matzok asher yitzik lecha oivecha. There's those words. Pesukim then specify, particularly Pesukim Nun Dalet and Nun Hey, how ha'ish harach b'cha v'ha'anog ma'od, even the most sensitive men amongst you will eat their own children. End of Pasuk Nun Hey. B'matzor uv'matzok, and then the greater chiddush, pasuk nun vav, even the sensitive women will eat the flesh of the babies who came out of their own body because they're so desperate. This is describing not just physical suffering, but being put in terrible circumstances where you lose even your own dignity. And unfortunately, we know about this from the recent events of the Holocaust. Later on in the Tochacha and Devarim, Perek Lamed Aleph, the Torah describes Hester Panim, being abandoned. Pasuk Yud Zayin v'chara pibo v'yomuhu v'azavtim v'histarti fanai mahem. Mentioned again, Hastir Astir Panayim Pasuk Yud Chet. Mentioned twice, four times the word total. Siege is representative of Hester Panim. Meaning beyond the physical suffering it causes, it symbolizes God separating himself from you. And we already saw it in one of the Nevuot I described to you. Which Nevuot? Remember, Yechezkel was told to build a model of Yerushalayim, build a siege around it, and take a pan and place it between him and the city. Let's go back to the bottom of page 4 and read about the significance of this. Yechezkel, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Gimel. V'yato kach lecha machvat barzel, v'natato oto kir barzel bencha v'nair. Make it like as an iron wall between you and the city. What this signifies is God cutting himself off from the Jewish people. The siege physically is you're cut off from the physical world. But spiritually, it symbolizes being cut off from God. And where do we see this? In the bottom of page 5, the Gemara in Brachot Taf Lamed Bet, where Rabbi Elazar says, Miyom Shecharev Beit HaMikdash, Nifsika Chomat Barzel. There's an iron wall, Bein Yisrael, Avi and Sheba Shamayim. Shenehamar, what's the Pasuk? V'yata kach lecha machvat barzel, v'natata ota kir barzel, beincha uveinayir. I think this is the backdrop of the strong words of the Chassam Sofer in explaining the significance of Asar HaTevis. Chassam Sofer says, why is the day so important? It was just the beginning of a process. Why do we fast it even on Shabbos? The Chassam Sofer says, because every year on Asar HaTevis, the Beis Din Shel Ma'ala, God himself, asks themselves a very basic question. Do we want to re-engage with the Jewish people? Or keep the degree of separateness we've had in the past year going? Why would it make sense that that would be Asar HaTevis? Because Asar HaTevis was the initial moment when God separated himself from the Jews. He walked away. He said, I can't engage with these people anymore. Whatever level we're engaged with God, that's rediscussed in Asar HaTevis. You can't wait till Yud Aleph Teves to fast. You have to relate to the question that day because God is relating to the question that day. There's a third aspect of Devarim, the Tochacha and Sefer Devarim, which I believe may be even the most important aspect of what the siege represents. Again, aspect number one, death and suffering. Aspect number two, Hester Panim. Aspect number three, Galus. If we take a look at the Tochacha, on the top of page 6, the psukim from the Tochacha, you see how Yechezkel actually built off these psukim. Take a look back at the bottom of page 4 first for a moment. Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel. Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel. How does Yechezkel describe the implications of siege? Top of page 5, excuse me. Pasuk Yud Gimel, top of page 5. Vayomer Hashem. Kacha yochlu b'nei Yisrael et lachmam tamei bagoyim asher adichem sham. Just like they're suffering in their cities, this is what they'll be suffering in Golus. The phrase bagoyim asher adichem sham is taken directly, top of page 6, from Devarim Perek Lamed, which describes Golus. Hagoyim asher adicha Hashem elokecha shama. Next source from page 6, Yechezkel Perek Hei, Pasuk Bet. He describes how the Jews will be scattered, la ruach, to the wind in Golus, v'cherev harik achareim, and they'll be pursued, even in Golus, by people wanting to kill them. V'yikra perek havav, you know, obviously, nevuah, we know how true this became. V'etchem ezara bagoyim, v'harikosi achareim charev. What I'm trying to show you is how Yechezkel is building off the Tochachas when he describes the Golus signified by the siege. Why does the siege signify the Golus that's coming? Very simple. The Jews are sent out of Israel as an expression of God saying he doesn't want them near him. And to show the significance of being away from God, God makes our life miserable in Golus. That separation began with the siege. Technically, it needed to be fleshed out through what happened later, but it began with the siege. And that's why, very powerfully, the Medrash Tanchuma writes, that God did us a favor. We were supposed to go to Galus and Asar B'Tavis, because basically God said enough of you. But it's cold outside. Just ask Aaron Singer. Where's Singer? Is that here? Right? It's cold. Could you imagine if God sent us to Galus and Asar B'Tavis? That wouldn't have been good. God did us a favor. He waited until Tisha B'Av. Most people are like, it's hot and sweaty, Tisha B'Av. I don't want to go to Galus then. Singer, when do you want to go? If you had to go to Galus, right? Would you want to go Asar B'Tavis or Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av, right? It's cold. But the point of this medrash is not to get into a discussion of Aaron Singer's preferences as far as the weather. The purpose is to show that essentially, when was the Galus supposed to have started? Asar B'Tavis. Because essentially, the moment God walks away from us is the moment things spin out of control, which explains very well the opinion of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai that what we're commemorating with this fast is not the siege, but the day they heard about it in Galus, because in essence, the two are inextricably linked to each other. And in essence, Asar B'Tavis is where everything bad that's going to happen in Galus begins. The fact that we're going to be forced by other nations to translate our Torah in a way that warps it, the spin-off of Christianity and all the suffering that's going to cause us, Ezra Sofer's need to have to try and restore Judaism after the Jews go to Galus the first time, and eventually, the big one, the biggest expression of what Galus means, the Holocaust. All this begins at Asar B'Tavis. The suffering that comes with it, which is meant for us to appreciate that Galus isn't a vacation, but a punishment. Unfortunately, the Jewish people have got so addicted to where they live that they start seeing it as an ideal, and that is a punishment. Whenever that happens, of course, God has to remind us that it's a punishment. It's the greatest proof and the greatest sustainer of the Jewish people's identity is the fact that they're not allowed by the nations around them to assimilate. And that when Jews assimilate, the nations wake up and remind them that they don't belong. In any case, the point is to understand the significance of what began with the siege. And it's so interesting, I brought these pieces in a few years ago, but they're just as relevant today. The concept of Israel under siege. There's no other country in the world that is as hated, as isolated, as Israel. You can't get the United Nations to vote against North Korea with the numbers you can get them to vote against Israel. It doesn't make any sense. Why are the Jewish people in China, they never had a Jewish community, they hate the Jews? How could it be? God sustains the siege of the Jewish people, the loneliness, the Eche Yashvav Adad of the Jewish people, because it's meant to express our isolation and separateness from God. The question is when we repair the roots of it that can prepare the broader issue. And that's like the sad thing of the Jewish people. Jews waited in Galus for hundreds of years for their problems to be solved. When they weren't solved, some people got restless and decided they're going to solve them themselves. So Herzl had this plan. We'll get the Jews out of everybody's hair in Europe, we'll put them in a country nobody wants, and they'll live happily ever after. That worked, right? Then the right wing in Israel said, okay, we'll beat the Arabs into submission, we'll win all these wars, and then we'll have peace. That didn't work. Then the left wing in Israel said, we'll give everything away, we'll do whatever you want, we'll have no principles and values, just peace. That didn't work. The question is how long it's going to take people to realize what the solution is. Most Israelis today believe we don't have a solution. We can't make peace with these people. There won't be peace until there's peace. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try to make peace. We should do everything we can to save a Jewish life, we should do peace plans, whatever, but there won't be peace until there's peace. And when I say there won't be peace until there's peace, what I'm referring to is the sugya on page 7, and what this will conclude. We saw the psukim earlier in Sefer Zechariah, which speak about the various fasts. The context is that the Kohanim in Bayit Sheni were asking whether they should continue to fast in Bayit Sheni. So the Gemara analyzes these psukim and explaining and says, "Bizman sheyei shalom," when there'll be shalom, the tainios will turn into happy days to celebrate the restoration. You, the sasun, the simcha. Ein shalom. When there isn't shalom, then there are days of fast. Now the question is, what does shalom mean? So if you look at Rashi, third source on page 7, third line, "Bizman sheyei shalom," he says, "Shein yad goyim tkefa," that the goyim aren't beating up on us. This seems to be the Rambam's understanding as well. In Hilchos Tanios, he says that tzomos will be batel imos ha-Mashiach, the significance of Yemos HaMashiach for the Rambam. We know from his words in Hilchos Tshuva is the world is the same world, but the Jews have their own rulership. The Rashba seems to explain it in a very similar way. It says Shalom is when the Jews are back on their land, assumably then there'll be peace. But Rabbeinu Chananel has a different shot of what Shalom means. He says Shalom is the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And the truth is, if you look back at Rashi, third source, page 7, even though on third line he mentions the Goyim don't attack us, on the first line he talks about the Beis HaMikdash being restored. And the Ritva, bottom of page 7, talks about both as well. So which is it? Is it peace? Is it the Beis HaMikdash? Or is it both? And the answer, of course, is that one is dependent on the other. And the Jewish people are finding out the hard way. And when I say that one is dependent on the other, I don't mean the building of the building. There are people who feel all we need to do is rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and everything will be fine. Now it could be, and this is an interesting discussion, that we need to take initiative and show we're interested in the Beis HaMikdash. That's definitely true. Whether that initiative should express itself with stones and building buildings is a separate thing, but we definitely need to show an interest in the Beis HaMikdash. But it's not the building of the stones that's going to fix things. It's the restoration of the relationship which makes the stone's significance that's going to fix things. Significant that's going to fix things. That's what I mean when I say there won't be shalom until there's shalom. We should work to save Jewish lives. We should understand that the Jewish people are suffering because God is trying to show us that our life can't be normal as long as our relationship with Him isn't the way it's supposed to be. So the notion that Jewish life could be normal without fixing that problem is an anathema impossible. And that's the whole point. Why are Jews so dysfunctional? It's not something genetic. I mean, it is genetic. Jews are supposed to be different. We're supposed to have a special relationship with God. And when we do, then everything works properly around. And then when we don't, so God is opening a door for us. And now we're able to be back in Israel. We're able to rebuild. But as functional as we are, we're still dysfunctional. Israel is the most dysfunctional, functional country in the world. It's not third world, where there's no plumbing and there's no train service. And it's advanced. It's like one of the most advanced countries that's getting bombed. What's pshat? That's what we have to ask ourselves. How do we understand why we're under siege? What's the significance of it? What's the takeaway? How do we fix it? We get someone good to replace, what's her name in the UN? We already forgot, no? Nikki Haley. If we get someone good to replace Nikki Haley, everything will be fixed. If we get the labor in England to support someone who's not anti-Semitic, everything will be fixed. We should try both those things, by the way. Because we've got to do whatever we can. But we've got to understand what the real fixer is. Why are we under siege? Still today. What did the siege initially symbolize? So we should think about that as us and as a people, and for ourselves as individuals. Talk about a relationship with God. Of course, there's a national issue and there's a personal issue. When a person's relationship with God isn't right, things close in on them. Problems close in. Issues close in. Difficulties close in. When things are right, they flow better. We should think about that because sometimes we don't think about the root. We're always dealing with the symptoms. Today is a day to think about the root. Be'etzem ayom hazeh. And each person should spend it in a meaningful way, whatever is meaningful for them. If you're so tired you can't function, you should go to sleep. It's better to go to sleep than play computer games. If you want to learn, it's always a good thing. You want to reflect on God, that's also a good thing. You want to go walk around the walls of Yerushalayim and where it actually happened. I'm not going in any particular order. You're tired, for sure. Go around, you walk, you think of the siege, and you think of what it means, and etc. That's for sure a very, very positive thing. The point is to use your day wisely on the tinus to reflect. If you can't, you go to sleep. Everyone knows I have a vort, right? I have a few vorts, but this particular vort, we say it a siyum. We thank God that He made us from the Yoshve Beis HaMedrash, right? Right? So the obvious question is, it says, thank you for making us part of the Beis Medrash sitters as opposed to the idlers. The obvious question, I don't understand, it's one or the other. If a person doesn't sit in the Beis Medrash, they're an idler. There are a lot of people out there doing good things. So I always say pshat, that person who has a Beis Medrash in their life always has something valuable to do. And even if they're out of the Beis Medrash doing other valuable things, they have a place to return and do something meaningful in. A person could be saving the world. But when they're not involved saving the world, they have nothing meaningful to do. I was in England for a few hours on Sunday. In the airport on the way back, I saw the Chief Justice of Israel Supreme Court. I'm not going to tell you your name. You can look it up. She was at a conference. I don't know what she was there, but probably something important. We're both in the terminal. I was preparing shiur. She was playing a computer game. Ashrechem. No, I'm not against computer games. It's mutter. Ashrechem, you have better things to do. And in yeshiva is a time when you learn how to appreciate the better things, love doing the better things, get used to using your time for better things. Not that there isn't anything to do outside yeshiva. There's a lot of good stuff to do. You all do good things, but you should reinforce the sense of always having something meaningful to do. It was an interesting scene. You see a woman, she's in her older, playing one of these silly computer games. What else should she do? Tanya, so we separate the men from the boys. If you're tired, go to sleep. It's mutter. It's mutter. If you're tired, you're not feeling well, go to sleep. Go to sleep. But if you're up, do something meaningful. It's like the Mishnah Berurah writes about the Rosh Hashanah, right? You're not supposed to sleep in Rosh Hashanah. Because, but a person is staying up and bumming around, I'm not sleeping in Rosh Hashanah, I'll play Settlers. It's better to go to sleep. So in general, we should use that time well. You know what I'm saying? If you want to build settlements, that's a wonderful thing. Anyone wants to go build settlements? It's a great thing. You know what I'm saying? So other very positive things to improve the world. But, you cancel your account on Airbnb. There's a lot of good things you can do. Minyan, linyan, bais, inyan. So machlekes girsos. They did back down. They didn't back down. It's a shaila, etc. But they didn't back down. I know. I think a lot of people took credit for them ki'ilu backing down. Egg on your face, no? Not your face. I'm saying one's face. Let's spend that Tainus meaningfully. Let's continue having a meaningful week. This afternoon we have Kach Chaburas after the Tainus is over. Shkoyach to the Shenamek guys. Looking forward to hearing from Shenamek guys. Meet that stand by the front door.